The Brothers Wisp.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp. Let's take a ride through space on this mothership. While you're listening,
hey everybody, this is Greg with Greg Talks number 9. Again, everybody, keep in mind this is a companion to the Brothers Wisp, so it is definitely a different pacing, different tone. Hopefully, much more humorous than informational. So it is informal mix of technology and rather technical and non-technical material. So keep that in mind. Keep your minds open. All right, so what is today? It is March 22nd. We are several days into self-quarantine. Everybody's getting a little kooky, a little punchy. So I figured what time better than to listen to me talk about stuff that super doesn't matter, right?
Exactly.
And today, you heard him right there, we have James Bird on again.
I'm so happy to be back. I didn't realize this is only number 9. This is my third one. I've now a part of 33% of your podcasts. Like, that's really cool. I thought I was just a little onesie twosie tag on, but apparently I'm now mainstream.
33% of the time he works every time. Excellent.
Exactly.
All right. Well, the big news for me in the last little bit since we've recorded one is that I got a new job. Hey!
Congratulations.
So I'm a senior special solutions architect. I have to read it because I can never remember what it is. I know there's 3 S's and an A. That's what I'm going to call myself from now on. And I'm working for Red Hat.
Awesome.
Yeah, dude, I am super stoked, even though it is the least ideal conditions I can possibly imagine to change jobs in. I'm doing it.
I don't know, because your new job is a whole lot of remote work, which is kind of ideal.
Well, it was supposed to include some travel, but that is not going to happen now. So yeah, it will be very remote work. And I guess I'm accustomed to doing remote work. And so it's a pre-sales kind of engineering job. So I specialize in the Ansible product, which I've been killing myself on. So it's nice to see that I'll actually be able to use that stuff in a real tangible way coming up soon. But I'm accustomed to doing kind of like education remotely, and I got a little pen pad and everything, like a little 6x4, so I can kind of whiteboard stuff, you know, because I'm very visual. I like to draw pictures and think that way. So
yeah,
I think I'll adapt pretty well.
When is your final day at the old place?
Final day. All right, here, let me open up my thing.
Have you told them?
Yeah,
that you're going to have a final day. Can we briefly go over, without specifics or with specifics? I don't care. The magical moment, because I'm just really want to know what it's like to leave willingly.
Oh, of my own accord.
You get to pack your own cardboard box.
None of this was nearly as satisfying as you get pack your own. Oh God. There was no cardboard box because I packed my office up a long time ago because they sold my last office space.
And
you know what? Fibertown, the data center, everything is for sale. Every square inch of space is for sale. And so whenever they put
you somewhere, and a handful of souls.
Well, you know what else? You know, I'm not going to get into that. quite literally, everything is for sale in every sense of the word. So, you get into a space and you know you're just occupying that temporarily. And so I had moved a couple of times already. The last time I was like, that's it, I'm done. I'm just 100% work from home. And that's the way I've been for the longest time now. And so I've really already adjusted to this kind of complete work from home sort of lifestyle.
Yeah.
Which obviously means I'm not wearing pants. So, I mean, that's what that's code for, right?
I mean, hence the camera angle.
Yeah. Well, everybody just likes to see the glimmer off the top of my head. So yeah,
Greg's not even wearing a shirt right now.
I'm wearing my fur coat. You know, I'm so hairy. Aww. You wouldn't know the difference anyway. But yeah. So I've been working from home for quite a while anyway. But man, it has just been such a weird build up to all this stuff. So I had a junior guy who was an amazing, so Lucas, amazing engineer. I was trying to hang on to him long enough for me to get out of there so he could like take everything over.
Yeah.
And that was for a couple of reasons. One is, you know, when somebody junior kind of takes over everything, generally they get a little pay bump. So ultimately he did it the right way. He told me way in advance, and he ended up Friday. This Friday was his last day. I approved his last timesheet. It was kind of bittersweet. But yeah, he had given me plenty of heads up, plenty of notice, so I knew he was leaving. But I tried to do a Hail Mary to hang on to him, and the company just wouldn't pay him. So
are they kicking themselves now?
now that I'm gone too, I would assume so. He was talented. I don't know if I told you this. I think I said it at some point, but when I officiated his wedding, I found out he has like a 159 IQ. Did I tell you that?
Yeah, you did. That was the last time we talked. His mom was like, you know, he's a genius.
Yeah. Freaking trips me out. Yeah. This guy was so smart. And you could tell it, but he wouldn't really let it on. You know, he hit everything with humor, a lot like yourself.
Yeah.
Really clever, well, but says the craziest
thing. That's why he was so demoralized when he failed the NP exam like three times. Like he knows how smart he is. Well, he knows he's better. He knows what he's capable of, and he was really frustrated that he was not succeeding.
Well, I found out some more stuff about him that really put that into perspective. It made a lot more sense, and that's not my information to share, so I won't. But yeah, so I 100% understand why he. I mean, everybody's got problems doing certifications.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know too, right? You did the CCNA dance and all that other stuff, and it's such a grind and a pain in the butt. So I totally get that, especially when you're going from CCNA to CCNP, it gets a lot harder. You started studying for that stuff, and it's a huge pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Do you think you're gonna chase any more certs? You think that part of your life is done?
No, I have to actually. I'm in the process of studying for my my CAPM, which is the Certified Associate Project Manager, and that's part of my master's program. It's one of the last two classes I have: project management and then my capstone. So I'm just barreling through project management stuff.
Where does that fall in? Like the what is it like? PMP or something? Is that
it is
similar
it's just
that?
Under the P, it's yeah. So the PMP is sort of your the CCNP equivalent, and the CAPM is going to be your CCNA.
Oh, okay. So it's just another stepping stone.
Yep, exactly.
All right, baller.
Yeah.
How do you how does that make you feel knowing you're going to have to like go and take this certification thing? Is that
nervous? But you know, like I don't know. It's all part of the game. It's part of a larger thing. It's just a cog in a larger machine, you know. So the degree is the goal, and like so it doesn't feel as intimidating as the NP did for some reason.
Well, maybe it's like this is, I guess, compared to you're getting your master's, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess compared to the grand scheme of that, this seems kind of smaller and less significant, so
yeah,
maybe it makes that easier.
That and technical certifications always have the practical part, you know, like there's the lab experience. There's no lab to, I mean, I guess they could, like, here's your project description, create an appropriate Gantt chart. Like, okay. Like, drag and drop items and prioritize this Gantt chart correctly. I don't know. You could technically do that, but I think you'd put more effort into creating that portion of the exam than would be worthwhile.
So, if you're getting ready to take an exam, and I know it's probably been a little while since you've taken like a certification test, because I mean, mm-hmm. Certs feel different to me than tests ever did in high school or in college.
Well, you never had to pay $300 to take a test in college.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess while technically it was my money on the line, it didn't feel like it was my money on the line.
Yeah, there's $300 doused in gasoline being suspended over a flame, and like that last submit click decides whether or not the money is dropped onto the flame or not.
I used to like it when you go to the Pearson View Testing Center and they'd have those ancient PCs that run the specific version of Java required to run.
Oh, yeah.
And so you'd click finish, glorious. And they would just like, they'd grind away forever before it would actually spit out your test results. So just kind of, just hold your breath for 30 seconds.
The last NP exam I took started out with a lab. first flipping question, and I misclicked and skipped it by accident. So,
oh my god!
So how do you complete the test knowing that you just knocked like 8 to 15% off your score? You're like, oh well, I need to ace this now, kids. The end of that story is I did not pass. Just in case you were wondering.
For anybody that's taking a Cisco test, you know you can't, there's no back button. You can't go back and look at any questions. So once you move past them, that's it.
Yeah.
I guess you gotta wait and hold the fire alarm.
Even if you took a Cisco test recently, don't ever skip the brief tutorial before your flipping lab question. Click through the damn tutorial to make sure you don't accidentally click next, thinking you're clicking next to the tutorial and not the entire lab.
Oh god, that's awful. That's so awful.
Dude, my stomach fell into my pants. I was like, well, that's it. There it goes, folks. There's no fixing this.
That's the worst. But yeah. I guess so something I always tell people, like whether they're my guys or just anybody I know that's fixing or take the test, I always say, all right, get ready, because you're going to, especially when they're first taking their CCNA, you know, or they're taking their very first CCNP, I say, get ready, because you're going to fail this test. And you have to know that you're going to reschedule this for under 2 weeks from now. So you're going to go in there, you're going to fail it, and you're going to reschedule, and there's no option not to do that.
Right, right.
So it's just, I don't know if that helps take the pressure off, but when they do ultimately fail it, they're like, okay, no big deal. I knew this was coming, even though they're... So you remember Daniel, my nephew Daniel?
Yeah, yeah.
So when he was working with us, I was getting him to take his Network Plus right there towards the end, and I told him that exact same thing, and he was like, whatever, I got this. And I tried to get him to do a test prep, you know, like to run through at the end. He wouldn't do it. He's like, this is easy, I got this. So he went in there and he failed it. And and then when he was walking out in the parking lot, he took his phone and like smashed it on the ground.
That fixes everything.
Yeah. So not only was he out the money for the test, he had to buy a new phone.
Yeah. Yeah. I've known similar people who make a mistake and then like go out, get drunk and wrap their truck around a tree.
Oh my God.
You remember that?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Because if I have financial troubles, you know what I'm gonna do tonight? Spend $120 on liquor and then wreck my car.
And then lose my license.
That's one way. Kids, if you're paying attention, that's three different ways now to not make mistakes in life.
You know what I usually like to say is I like to do it I like to figure out how to do it by doing it all the wrong ways at first. But I think those are kind of obvious ones, you know.
That's the point of being a parent, though. Like you in your teens and twenties, you made the mistakes. You go, okay, I don't know everything. You know, life is different now than it was 20, 30 years ago. 100%. But I can tell you some things that never change. Getting upset about something, drinking away your sorrows, and wrapping your car around a tree is universal. Even when we get to the point where we have flying cars,
you're gonna have a bad time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh God. All right. So let's bring it back around. So
So tell me. I want to hear the unsatisfying story of
the unsatisfying. And then so we're all isolated. Honestly, I like doing these sorts of things in person.
Sure.
One is, you know, you get to see the look on their face, and then you get to have the conversation. It makes it so much more satisfying. You can say, "I'm gonna leave." You can tell
everybody. Yeah, because on the phone, they can hide the fact that they're crapping their pants, and they have no idea how they're going to resolve this issue.
No, but really, it's just I feel like it's. I know this isn't the case, but it felt kind of disrespectful to do it. You know, not in. I don't know. It just feels like one of those things where it's, you know, I want it.
Needless it's like to breaking say, up via text.
Yeah, probably. Or on Facebook. We're done.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I tried to get him a hold. So anyway, I
sorry.
Well, let me reel back a little bit. So the Red Hat interview process is thorough. It's very extensive. So it was four interviews before I got to the panel interview. And I got to talk to talent acquisition people. I got to talk to the person that would be my manager. And then I got to go through two technical interviews. So it's people on the team. I'm not sure if it's always this way, but it was people that I'm directly going to work with. I bet it actually is, because it gives them an opportunity to kind of feel out your personality and things like that. And I think in a lot of places, they're going to hire for personality and they can teach you everything else, right? I guess attitude and aptitude, right?
Advice at a large, like 30%, was it 30% of the interview process is whether or not you're a fit for the corporate culture.
Yeah. So I got on the technical ones, I was talking to a network guy, and that's what I am. I'm a network guy that going to work. And so I am not going to, I am, I'm working on the Ansible team, with a guy named Michael. And so he was asking me a lot of stuff, not necessarily how do you configure stuff, but just, I don't know, just kind of situational based things. And, did all of that and then got through that. And then, I guess they would give their recommendation back to, the talent acquisition people. And then I talked to another guy who was more of a Linux admin, on the Ansible team. And, he was, really, that guy was really just testing for, attitude. For the most part, the other guy was really just kind of technically seeing what kind of chops I had a little bit here and there. The fifth and final interview is a panel interview. And so traditionally it's going to be the manager, the guy that's going to be your manager. It's going to be his counterpart. This is a guy that covers the northern region.
Are you not on Justin's team then?
I am. Yeah. Yeah.
He was on the panel.
Yeah. 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 So it was him. Okay. His counterpart, like basically him copy and pasted it up for the northern region, and then somebody from sales, and then everybody's boss was on there too.
Wow.
And so traditionally they get all these guys together, they all fly them into one place, and then all of the candidates they're going to interview, they fly them in there. Well, travel is not happening right now. I'm not sure if any of you guys have noticed, but there's some kind of a virus scare thing or whatever. I can't remember what it's called. But that's going on. So needless to say, we did everything remote, which I think actually kind of worked in my favor, because instead of trying to coordinate all of these disparate schedules, all they had to have was an hour and a half free in their calendar. So we got it all together pretty fast. And it was, I found out the day before the panel interview, it's a star-based, interview process. Have you ever heard of that?
No. Uh-uh.
Star-based. It is situation, task, action, result. So they, in effect, ask you questions like, and I'm going to ask you a couple.
All right.
I want to see how you do.
Well, let me know how I do, because that'll determine whether I apply for a job at Red Hat.
But no. So the idea is they're going to ask you a question that it's situational. And they don't want a vague answer. They want a very specific example. So they want you to give some background, lay out what was going on, right? Where you were situationally, what happened, what was the outcome, right?
Oh, sure. Okay.
So what you did and then what was the outcome. So it'll be stuff like, I mean, there's also the traditional, what do you think your greatest weakness is question, right? And it's I hate that. That question is just... That's so terrible. I mean, I guess there's some value to it to see how people are going to answer, but everybody who's going in an interview should already have made up an answer that they want to tell you. You know,
right.
I mean, not to say it's not true, but you know, it's something everybody's prepared for.
Right.
But these star questions are something like, describe a time when it was especially important to make a good impression on a client. How did you go about doing so? And so you get to, on the spot, think of a response. What do you got?
I can't think of a specific customer. We had a handful of customers come through Fibertown where they had clearly been described, you could see the glaze on their eyes. They've been talked through a larger solution than they actually needed. And you know, the sweet spot for Fibertown was medium to small businesses. Yeah, SMBs are where it's at. They don't have a lot of money. And the sales guys, obviously, you know, they want the biggest whale they can manage. But, you know, sometimes those SMBs were, you know, tuna in whale suits because sales sized them up and fit them with a whale suit. Yeah, now there's just a handful of times where you just walk in and go, okay, listen to what they're actually, listen to them say what they need, what they have, what they need, and what their goal is, and be able to hear what they actually want, and then talk them through that and say, hey, because that's ultimately what, they're not there to buy a product. If they wanted to buy a product, they would browse to a website like Rackspace or AWS and just click through and spin their product out. But they came here to have a face-to-face because they're looking for advice. And half the time, at least half the time, especially later on in my tenure there when sales was just not doing their job, half the time they took that advice and went and bought from somebody else. And that, honestly, that was my goal. That was your goal. Ideally, we'd love them to buy Fibertown because that paid our paychecks. But like, I don't know. You and I would always sit down as customer advocates and be like, listen, we're ops. You know, I'm going to have to deal with you for the next X term of your contract. Like, I want you to have what you need and not crap on me for the next 36 months because you bought something you didn't need, you know?
Yeah. I always felt like if we lost the deal, it wasn't because of the data center or operations or engineering. We lost it on price. And to be honest with you, I was okay with that because that was the one thing that really none of us could control. Yeah.
Yep.
But everything else that was within our control, we did a good job at. So
Did fantastic. So how did I do on that question?
You didn't give me a specific example.
Oh, well, I mean, I had this guy.
That one's kind of vagary, right? So
it is.
One,
I mean,
I felt like, it was good because so you turned it around so I'm just giving you a hard time. Let's see.
Well, I don't want to fail these interviews. I'm going to have to rehearse that.
Here's one akin to one of the questions they asked me. Because I can't. You know, it's like when I'm doing stuff like that, I go into like a fugue state, and then at the end of it, I just come out. I was like, "What happened?" You know, apparently I was speaking Portuguese the whole time. It's like, "Ha! I didn't know I could do that."
It's because Justin roofied you.
Tella roofied me, which is basically he just told me, and I had to take the pills myself. I sent you a sandwich, Bill Cosby special. All right, here's the question. When you're working with a large number of customers, it's tricky to deliver excellent service to them all. How do you go about prioritizing your customers' needs?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one.
But it's one we've all run into, right? At one point.
Right. Right.
You got 10 people asking for stuff. How do you decide how you're going to prioritize it?
Well, easiest stuff first, really. The stuff that is as close to cookie cutter, because almost no request is cookie cutter, but like you've been at a job for 10 to 15 years. You know what you can do fast. You know what has a longer lead time, and you start the lead time. Everything you need to order something for, you start first, and while you're waiting for resources to arrive, you knock out the other stuff.
For sure.
You stack up that Gantt chart. Everything that can be run in parallel, you run in parallel. And then everything that has a prerequisite, you start the prerequisites first.
I might be crazy, but are you answering all these questions through the Fibertown lens? Because it sounds like you are. What is the current job lens look like for? I mean, do you guys get lots of stuff in your hopper at once or nah?
Not typically, no. You know, if it's an issue in production, it takes priority. That's about it. I mean, if it's the non-prod environments, they're important, but it's not a fire. It's just like a
right.
It's a nice to have. And then there's also customer non-prod and then internal non-prod. Customer non-prod, they still actively, you know, they do dev work in that non-prod environment. So for insert big customer name, their nonprofit environment, they're actively testing their portals and their radius authentication and stuff like that. So that's just as important as prod.
Gotcha. All right. So you don't know how I answered that one, just to juxtapose
yours.
I said that anybody who's ever worked in IT, you understand all too well the concept of triage, right? There's a million things coming. Some of them are on fire. Some of them aren't. And you really just have to figure out which ones are most urgent and shuffle those to the front and try and set clear expectations with people and constant communication, right? Just clearly communicate. This is where I'm at. This is what I'm working on. And then set expectations. Like, you know what? I'm probably not going to be able to get to that until tomorrow. Or I'm going to try and do blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? So just all these people that are working on it, right?
And that is so much easier when you operate the way you and I did and probably still do. I'm assuming you do. Yeah. Is with you set the precedence the day you meet of having just a ridiculous amount of transparency. And when you establish the relationship like that and they understand, hey, I'm going to shoot you straight, you know, you can get away with saying, hey, man, I know this is important. It's important to me too, but I'm not going to get to that till Thursday. And they know that you're shooting them straight.
Right. Because I think most of us understand that it's a human on the other side of the line, you know, and whenever you show a little vulnerability and say, look, you know, I've got all these things coming in. I'm really sorry about that, but this is where we're at. And we're, you know, I think most people understand that they may not necessarily be happy about it all the time, but,
I think people no definitely one wants to understand. Hear wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was kind of mine. It's just, I think, you know, what's so funny is I went through, I went through probably 70 of these test questions, like, that I might see and just tried to come up with answers for them just so I'd be ready. And it seemed like most of them kind of came down to clear communication. That was really most of my answers for most of the stuff is, you know, you've got somebody upset with you, clear communications. You've got a million things coming at you. What do? Clear communicate. You know, it's just set expectations, clear communications. It makes life so much simpler. So let's see.
Exactly.
Here's one. Tell me about a time you were under a lot of pressure. What was going on and how did you get through it? And see, whenever they ask you some stuff like this, they want a very specific example. They want you to set up a specific example, talk about what you did and what the outcome was. So tell me about a time you were under a lot of pressure. So now imagine you haven't prepped for any of this stuff. You got to come up with it on the spot.
Right.
Where's your brain at right now? Tell me
right now,
under a lot of pressure, what was going on and how did you get through it?
The first thing that came to mind was it is 10 o'clock at night. The data center's not even officially open yet.
You going to silence an alarm or? Big back up. Go. So for everybody who noticed an abrupt job, we may have just cut something very juicy out. So we'll go ahead and
for Patreon only for $20 a month, you can hear the 10 seconds that was just cut out.
That one's not going to see the light of day. I don't think that story is never going to see the light of day.
All right, hit me up on Slack and I'll tell you the story. All right.
Teach me outside. What's your under a lot of pressure? What's your number two for under a lot of pressure?
Under a lot of pressure. Number two.
Well, you could say that in a job interview. You just can't say that on a podcast. That's all.
Fair enough. Number two was probably, hey, we're prepping for call manager backups, and the call manager blows up in the process of prepping to back it up.
I remember that.
So
what did we do that blew it up?
What did we do?
It
was my fault.
We installed.
I'll go into it.
No,
I installed.
Was it VMware tools or something?
No, it was Ghost.
Oh, Ghost.
I was going to ghost it and see. Microsoft's the very specific installation of Microsoft Server 2000 that Call Manager 412 runs on is very particular with what you do with it, and ghosting it was not an option.
Ghost riding the call manager.
You just made it a ghost. we had the redundant call manager with the database on it, and I had to rebuild it from scratch. So the cool thing about where we used to work was it used to be a very, very small business provider, and they got their version of call manager because they signed up to be a reseller. The problem is the version they got was like call manager 2.1.
Whoa.
And so when you do a restore or a rebuild from scratch, there is a 9-inch by 9-inch by 6-inch cardboard box in the storage room that has all the install CDs in it.
I remember that.
From every single version from 2.1 to 4.12. And it is your best guess to figure out which one you need to install first and then an upgrade path from there.
Oh my gosh.
All of this I had to do while we had no phones.
Ugh.
Ugh. Good times.
I remember that. I don't remember the process to reinstall. I don't remember getting it up. I just remember once we got there and going from there.
I do. And I'm gonna charge a lot of money to get them out of that hole if they get into it.
Pepper's
again.
Farm remembers. Oh man, the good old days.
Good times. So yeah, I blew up the call manager.
And then,
but man,
what's that Windows backup or the Cisco Bars? That's what it is. Bars.
Yeah. Backup recovery. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There you are. Dang. Good times.
I'm sorry. I made you have to splice edit to jump edit an episode.
No,
I'm really
no,
sorry
that's a
about
funny
that.
One. No, it happens every now and then. Because I'm usually super lazy and I try not to like do any additional work if I possibly can, but now it's going to take me an extra 10 seconds to edit this one. It's going to be devastating.
Yeah.
Here's one that I didn't get, but I was just curious to hear what your answer
is. So they give you a list of like 70 different questions you might get asked?
No, I started Googling like mad because they said the email I got says it's a star-based interview process.
So you started Google. You just went on Reddit and like, all right, everybody, give me your.
No, that's what they said. Like in the email I got the day before, like 24 hours before the thing, it said this is a star-based interview, and if you're not familiar with that, you should probably Google it. And so I Googled it, and I was like, oh my god, let me start really trying to figure this stuff out, because like in all the research I saw, it's like they don't want vague answers; they want specific examples, and that's what they're asking for. So you've got to be ready for that stuff. So I quite literally have a bunch of post-it notes over here where I like wrote a cheat sheet for myself where I just went through every question I could and tried to write down an answer. Not that I could like use them while I was in the interview, but just so that I would.
Oh, were you on video?
Yeah. So I couldn't really do that, but they only asked me like two or three. Thank God. But they took the full hour when they were actually asking. But here's one that I liked that I wish I had gotten. Not necessarily that I wish I had gotten. I was just thinking it's actually kind of interesting to ask other people. Tell me about the first job you've ever had. What did you do to learn the ropes? So what was your first job?
Like first job ever in my life.
That's what it said. First job you've ever had. I guess if you were like babysitting your little brother, it probably doesn't count. But
I mean, yeah, first job I had was working at Kentucky Fried Chicken, and a friend of mine, for a summer. And let me tell you, that sucked.
You worked the whole summer.
Yeah.
Oh, what a trooper.
Yeah. A friend of mine worked there already, so like I kind of rode his hip and learned the ropes just by because I'm a very tactile on the job learning kind of guy.
When he dipped, you dipped.
It's true. Yeah, I put my. Oh man, yeah, no, it's very true.
So what was your favorite part about working at KFC?
Going home,
smelling like chicken.
Yeah, no, it sucked because like you wear glasses, you open the fryer, and like, there you go.
Instantly.
There's a coat of grease. Like, don't wipe your glasses. Do not wipe your glasses. The worst thing you could do was try to clean it off. Just let it coat evenly as the oil steam comes. Like,
I'm sure that helped your acne and everything else, right?
Oh, God, yeah. I was the most attractive 16-year-old kid in the world. yeah. But damn, I got a lot of really good chicken.
Did you?
It totally demystifies the mashed potatoes, though, because mashed potatoes like were amazing to me before I worked there, and they're like, oh, you know, you're just pouring an ass load of powder into a bucket
and then mixing water
and adding water, and you're like, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Well,
I figured as much.
It's all the MSG. That's really the only reason that your body wants it.
I mean, this is like the same thing with like cocaine. The gravy, right? It's just like a bunch of powder, yeah. And you, yeah.
Yeah, it's all just powder. Whatever. It's very, yeah.
You know, I remember when I was a kid, like, getting the bucket of chicken and loving that stuff. But I haven't eaten KFC, like, chicken on the bone in a million years. Maybe it's okay. Last time I got it, I got, like, the tenders or whatever. And, man, I was like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's just terrible. I don't know, whatever.
Who knows? It's tough to tell.
And that's how you learned the ropes at that job?
Literally, you just, yeah, and it is. You keep dodging the story of you leaving, and I'm like, literally just a phone call, like
bring it back around. Yeah, yeah. No. I just like I thought, I don't know. This like these questions are interesting. Like I love
they are. No,
I love
they are.
Puzzles. I love spontaneity. I love people putting me on the spot. I love kind of the idea of I've got to think on my feet and come up with something that. Well, the idea is you're supposed to come up with a specific example that paints you in a good light. Like when you complete it, it's good, right? You can't say like, oh, there was this time I was really stressed out and it was really awful and I hated it and I quit the job. Right? You know, it's like you can't.
Right. And how did you resolve the issue? I quit and moved to a different state.
I changed my name again and got away. You know, it's like you got to like paint yourself in a good light at the end. So it's kind of, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. It's just like, it's fun. It's fun to kind of think about it. But let's see, reeling it back. So I went through the panel interview and it was successful. And that afternoon, I heard back from the talent acquisition guy, and he's like, hey, man, it worked out great. If you can give me a verbal okay, we'll start the paperwork. And then that was on Tuesday of this week, because it's still this week. And then on Wednesday, yeah. I got the DocuSign paperwork from them, and I signed it. And an hour later, I tried calling my boss. I couldn't get a hold of him. So I had to email my 2 weeks in, which felt really lame. So I emailed him, the executive team, and HR saying, hey, this is my 2 week notice. And I just did the customary, you know, I appreciate everybody here. I appreciate my time at Fibertown. It's been extremely valuable for me. All this is true, right? Absolutely true. Is that I wouldn't be where I am or who I am without this place. And it's been a weird, interesting journey there with a lot of ups and downs and twists and turns. But, you know, I guess I haven't even really, because of this COVID stuff, whenever we really started figuring out that we were going to have to, you know, lock down all this stuff, it was quiet for like 2 days while everybody was figuring out how to get all their employees to work remote. And then after that, it has been, oh man, I don't know, just like out of the frying pan into the fire. Dude, it's been so busy with people upgrading their circuits, people preemptively upgrading, some people saying, hey, we're seeing slowness, and then you show them their bandwidth graph and they're hitting a cap and they're like, well, how do we upgrade this? And you say, okay, here, talk to your salesperson, blah blah blah. And then the next one comes in, same song and dance, here's your salesperson, blah blah blah. You know, it's just like you're just left and right and just shuffling, and then skeleton crew
every day. Yeah, every day you're shuffling.
Yeah. I know. Animal print out of control. But we're running the skeleton crew up there so that like when somebody gets diagnosed and we have to quarantine all those people, then we can decontaminate and run in a new crew. Yeah. And so it's, you know, it's just,
it's a good thing they all don't share one mouse and keyboard.
No, we're doing it right. We're doing it. Don't make that face. Yeah. So it's just, you know, it's like just everything moving at once. And it's just, it doesn't feel real because I'm so busy right now.
Yeah. No, dude, that 2 weeks is going to burn by.
Yeah. I have a feeling it will. And so I haven't even really, you asking me to, what does it feel like? What do this is the first I've actually stopped to think about it.
There was a bubble that caught in your throat when you started talking about it. You actually haven't processed it yet.
No. Well, no. I mean, it's like, oh, it's going to be such a relief. Just get me wrong. Like in the interview, they said, are you going to regret not being able to, you know, be an engineer every day and, you know, do all these things and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I'm not going to regret getting woke up at 3 a.m. with stuff broke. And I said, I'm not going to regret 2 a.m. change windows. I'm not going to regret. I just basically had like all of a sudden 1,000 not regrets. And I was like, I was like, I'm going to miss the people. And that's it. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you,
most of those people are gone now anyway.
That's the most significant impact that place has had. Well, I mean, I can't say that. One of the things I like the most about it and that I will possibly miss is the people, but the people that matter the most, I'm taking them with me, you know, like, not, I mean, they're not like leaving the company, but I'm still going to be, you know, attached to them or whatever. So like, you know, like that Slack that it, that you're in, the Little Brothers Wisp Slack, you get to from patreon.com/ the Brothers Wisp. Let me put that plug in there. no, like, so Lucas left and, I got him in the Slack,
right.
I've still got him attached, and Brent is like one of my number one guys there, and I'll have him in the Slack. So my guy Sean, one of my junior engineers there, I'll have him in Slack. Great, so it's, I'm staying connected to the people that really matter, and I even when you left, I stayed connected to you, and you've had significant impact on me in my life for sure. But yeah, I mean everything you've ever done, everywhere you ever go, every person you ever interact with makes an impact one way or the other on you, whether you're conscious of it or not, right? And every job you've ever had, whether it was crappy, you know, frying chicken, or I was a cashier at Winn-Dixie back in the day for a long time, and, you know, all that stuff makes an impact on you. So at Fibertown, when I had to start giving tours, I hated that. Like, it was so awkward and uncomfortable for me, and I eventually mellowed into it, and to where it became one of the more enjoyable parts, because
that
now
actually,
I'm a performer.
Yeah, there was like a year and a half in there when you and I would tag team tours.
Those
that was probably
fun.
the best year and a half of my life.
I would say those are still, like, of all the tours that have ever come and gone through that place, those are still the most fun and dynamic and engaging tours that have ever happened in that place, just because you and I just have a chemistry where we play off of each other so well, and it just, where one would pick up, the other would, you know, just
it was amazing.
It was really effortless. It was a lot of fun. It was fun, and that became a fun part of my job, was doing that sort of stuff, and the idea where you could sit down with people and come up with a solution and really help them, right? Because that's what you were doing. You're honestly helping them. There was some pain, you know, they were afraid of, you know, I have to, and I guess we had more success with people that were first time colocation buyers, right? Because we were so personable and so human. And, I think we put people at ease, and that's what you're doing, right? You're taking the core of what they do, and you're saying, hey, I'm going to make sure this stays up for you. And,
exactly.
And, you know, we would garner trust from people in such a way that I never saw any of our salespeople do. Not to say that they're not good at selling, and our sales folks are, especially now, are really good with contact, you know, and keeping tabs on our customers and all the way through the process and even after the process. Like Christy, man, she, you're never getting rid of her. She's like herpes. As soon as you think she's gone, bud, get a little flare up. you gotta Valtrex that chick out of your system. But no, she's an amazing salesperson, right? And keeps contact, but she's not the technical person that's going to look you in the eye and say, I'm the guy guaranteeing this is going to stay up, and this is how I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? And have all those technical details.
I don't even know how they're going to do that anymore.
They'll be fine. You know, every organization has changed, right?
And
I think it's going to be extremely healthy. And while I was leading the engineering stuff, you know, we did a lot of really cool things. But like I was telling them about whoever the next guy is they hire, I was like, dream big. You know, if there's a direction you want to move in where I just had a big hole in my knowledge, or, you know, you never felt I was moving you that direction, hire a guy that will do that. And, you know, the world's your oyster at this point. You know, you can open up into all new territory if you know what I mean? Like, you just limitless possibility in front of them. So I'm really curious to see what they do with that. I think there's potential for them to do some really cool stuff. And that's kind of how I feel about movies. So anyway, reel it back. So I had to email in my thing, and I had Tony from sales, VP of sales. He was like texting back and forth. He's like, ah, you're leaving, huh? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so we kind of hit back and forth. And it was like, it was a pretty good while later that my boss finally actually got back a hold of me. And I don't remember a lot about what he said, but I do remember him saying, oh, you're going to leave us in our darkest of hours or something like that. Like in this dark of hour, darkness of hours, right. Something like that. I was like, you trying to guilt me into staying or?
I was just like, guys, you are years past being able to guilt me to do anything here.
No, it's like, dude, have you met my mom? You got to come harder than that.
Yeah.
I mean, she wielded guilt like a longsword. So, it's like, you're a little behind the curve, bud. You got some work ahead of you there.
That's funny. No, you're going to leave us.
You know,
yes.
And I guess you
do better.
I think you maybe more so than anybody else there felt an ownership of that place because, I mean, you were there long before me, and I think you were there before anybody. You were our longest surviving employee, and
yep.
I mean, when I started working there, we weren't even Fibertown. We didn't even have the name. In our building, there was still where the data center is. It was basically empty shell with some people upstairs, just kind of randomly barbecuing on the roof sometimes or whatever, you know. And I don't know, man. We built it from the ground up. And I guess and I used to describe it as this place is my third child, because we really birthed it, you know, in every sense of the word, you know, it was painful. There was a lot of sweating, a lot of medication involved. It came from our hands, you know, every bit of that place. And I don't know how you can go through something like that and not feel some sense of ownership. And so, it's weird to think about, finally 100% separating yourself from a place like that. And when you do leave, it's hard not to feel some sense of, guilt for leaving, which I thought was ironic that he went down the guilt path, whether he was joking or not. I'm sure he was probably just joking, but it just kind of, it was really funny to kind of think about it in those terms.
Well, yeah, no, you've written a story. It's like, you know, I'll take it back to what I know most, which is LARP. And it's, you know, when you're the guy who's telling the story for a year and a half, like I did up in Pennsylvania and like I've done down here in Texas, it's tough to walk away from that story because you wonder whether the next guy is going to be able to do it justice.
If it's going to love your baby the way you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, you got to go, you know what? LARP is a volunteer experience. This is not worth, it's not worth like losing sleep over this crap. Yeah. And the same thing, they'll be fine.
Oh yeah.
They all make a lot of money off of what you used to do for them. And
yeah,
so like,
nope. Oh, so much money.
We made some people some really, really, really rich.
Yeah. But you know, I there's this guy like Jimmy DiResta, and he was, you know, he's an artist to some extent, but he's also a maker. And one thing he said is that, I think it was him that said it. He said, artists never finish their creations. They just abandon them. Right. And so, at some point you just have to, you know, it's like, yeah, I've done everything I can here. You know what? And I had, you know, because they asked me, why are you leaving? And I had some reasons, but one of them too was, I've hit a ceiling, and I hit that ceiling a long time ago as far as where I can occupationally go at this place. Unless the owner decides to give me the company, there's not really anywhere else I can go there. And I forgot how fun it is to compete. You know, and then it's funny because pickleball taught me how much fun it can be to compete again, because I used to be able to compete against you and Wes and those guys, you know, just trying to like figure stuff out or fix stuff really fast. And then we got so siloed there towards the end because we were like the guys running the freaking place, and you were so busy with operations, and you know, I was doing the engineering crap, and you know, so it's just, don't know, the parts of it that
I forgot how much I loved problem solving and networking until I actually was forced to just be a network engineer again instead of like a manager. I really dig it. I love jumping in to someone's undocumented network and like finding my way around. Right. Like, okay, cool. I got the lay of the land now.
It's fun. It's fun. Yeah. It's fun for sure. I don't know. So, I feel 100% good about leaving. I've heard somebody say before that your career is your responsibility. So that's what I always try to tell everybody there. It's like, build yourself. While you're here, build yourself. And I will 100% pay you to do it. So keep making yourself amazing, because you're going to help me. You're going to help yourself. And
I kept telling him, every time there's a vacuum in responsibility, take it. Like, if you, like, this is an opportunity, guys, especially with you leaving. You want to own call manager? Get in there and own that. Be the only guy that knows call manager. That's how I did it.
Yeah.
Dude, I was one of four network engineers. Three of them quit, all within weeks. This is before I knew networking. I was, you know, fourth string guy primarily focused on phone support, and they hired a CCIE to come in for a couple weeks because we had some circuit turnups. And man, Ron either just was really lazy or saw an opportunity to pour in and make a guy learn. But he's like, you're doing these BGP turnups. I had not messed with BGP before that. This was customer stuff I was messing with. But then, you know, I carried it for 3-6 months before they hired you and Wes.
Do you remember your state of mind when you first found out that it was like just you? And you had to...
Which time? Damn!
That's right.
Which time was it just me?
Because I got to do that to you, too.
You did. I can tell you my state of mind at that point, turning up a friggin' apartment complex in the middle of the summer when Suddenlink had all their stuff. They were bleeding stuff across VLANs.
God, and it was a hot mess.
They had a Microchip router responding on my point-to-point VLAN that shouldn't have been there because they...
connected you to somebody else's network.
Yeah, yeah. Dude.
Oh, and then they had MTU issues out the wazoo. Yeah.
Yep. And I think I've already told you this, but if I haven't, I was Emmer effing your name up and down the aisles.
Were you really?
Of that place.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's like, I was so mad. Like, where's this document? I don't know where any of this stuff is. Oh, dude, I was so pissed.
Oh.
It was the most miserable 3 weeks of my life. Yeah. So yeah, that was my frame of mind. I thought about just never coming back. Just saying, you know what? I'll find something else. This place can burn to the ground. Yeah. No, it sucks. It sucks. Like when everybody leaves and like everything's on you. I feel bad for your second guy. I feel bad for Jacob. There's a lot that's gonna fall on them. And especially knowing the way that place works. They'll expect Jacob to pick up the majority of that slack.
Well, that's the problem
with Jacob. For the longest time.
Is he's so good at what he does, he seems to never let anything hit the ground. Like somehow he keeps all those plates spinning. And I don't know how he can manage it. But you know what? I actually do know how he can manage it, because he's finally started delegating off. He's finally started trusting some people. And he's got a couple of guys that at least, right? He's got at least a couple of guys that he really, you know, Brent. I mean,
Brent's amazing. I'm glad to see Brent finally taking some responsibility and rocking some stuff. That's great.
Yeah, he's always so reluctant about everything Brent is, but he's really good at what he does. He just doesn't have a lot of confidence in himself. So it's just got to keep rah 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 cheering him along, and so he's doing good. And then Jacob, I think in the hierarchy of things, everybody's going to start reporting to Jacob, which is I think for the best. And you know, he'll make sure everything gets taken care of. So everything's going to be good. And then I'm still, even in the transition afterwards, I'm still going to help assist them for a while. I don't know how long that while will be. I might need to put a date on it.
Is that just, that's just free advice, or is that?
Nah.
Good.
Nah.
Good.
Because I'm going to be stretched so thin as it is anyway that, you know, if I'm burning my last couple of extra hours doing stuff over there, it's, you know, you'll get compensated for it. So And I have been, you know, so I've been, man, I've been working on this specific job for probably 8 months or working towards it. So I've been trying to slowly transition myself out as best I could. So document like crazy. Because somebody told me that I left a network completely undocumented. I have no idea.
Not completely.
Just the important parts.
There were some holes.
But you know what? There's always going to be holes.
Yeah. No, yeah. There's so much stuff that we've slapped in place temporarily that got left there because it was important that we just never thought about writing down.
Well, that's what does Disher say? He says the most permanent solution is a temporary fix. So. Yeah. But no, it's like, but just beyond that, there's the burden of knowledge. Like you've done it a million times. And so you just, you know, these things so intrinsically as part of you that you don't even realize you need to say it or to document it, you know, cause everybody should know this, right? Cause everybody's in my head. So it's, there's going to be portions where it's like that. And, I did an exercise a little while back of pretend like everybody quits. What do you need to know? You know, or Greg gets hit by a bus or, you know, whatever it happens to be, your
Greg got hit by a better job.
Yeah. Ran me right over. Bam. Yeah, you know, because that can always happen. And so, like any place, but I would say no place more is it more important than a data center where you're basically selling redundancy, you know, in disaster recovery services like that, that you have that kind of redundancy in your staff and stuff like that. So, documentation is a big part of that, right? So even if your staff does pick up and leave, your people are still well equipped to take care of it. And so I've been documenting stuff like crazy for a while and then starting to really delegate duties off. So like access control, like I've been taking for well over a year now, I've been taking Brent. Every time I do something with access control, I take Brent and I make sure that he understands everything that I'm doing. So we, I think the last piece probably in the puzzle was we added a secure panel to access control a couple of weeks ago. And so Brent did that with me hand in hand. Sean actually did it as well. So they 100%. So it's, there's virtually nothing they can't do in that system, whether it's from software and the troubleshooting doors, top to bottom, mags, rexes, inputs, all the way top to bottom.
Awesome.
They should really know. And then troubleshooting power supply issues, you know, just everything. So really access control, that should be off. Servers and stuff, you know, that's all documented as best we can. We've got backup routines, you know, it's due diligence on everything. We use Unimus for all of our network infrastructure backup. That thing is killer for networks. So I'm really pleased we have that up and running for the existing guys as well as the new guys. It's great. Like in our, we have a Slack channel where it pops up all the backups that happen and shows you everything that failed, everything that passed, all the changes that were made. So
awesome.
It's all right there for you. Which we didn't used to have that with NCM. That thing was a piece of crap. So it's kind of a best effort. You think it works maybe, and then half the time it wouldn't. I don't want to get into it. NCM is awful.
But,
So it's, talk to the boss. That was it.
No counter offers, nothing.
Not even the slightest hint of it.
Wow.
Which is, you know, it's fine. And I really didn't expect them to either.
No.
Yeah. So they did ask if, Lucas would be interested in, cause at one point I tried to get them to pay him more to stay and he agreed that he would, but they, decided it wasn't something they wanted to do. So
right.
He said, hey, do you think Lucas would be interested in coming back if we paid him more? And I said, well, I think that ship sailed. And he goes, why do you say that? I said, because he lives in Oregon now. He said, oh, okay. So, yeah.
What makes you say that? I don't know.
He physically lives across the country now. I think he's already started his new life. So he's over there.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's, one of my notes I had in here was the short-sightedness of some management teams. Sometimes, you know, they're very, I mean, management is supposed to be very goal-oriented, right? The guy running the company, he's supposed to have some specific goals in mind. And sometimes those, you know, understandably, sometimes those list of things aren't always within their control. You know, like earlier we were talking about, you know, how do you do triage? Maybe in the list of triage things, hanging on to a specific network engineer wasn't in the list. you know, or sure. I put it in the list, but it wasn't anywhere near the top, right?
And so, well, who could ever, you leaving is like an act of God. That's not something you as a manager, something you should prepare for. Yeah. But no, that's a perfect example of being short-sighted. Like, you should never assume that you've got 100% complacent employees that are never going to go anywhere. Like, that's,
yeah. I
mean, just because a guy's been there for 12 years doesn't mean he's going to stick around for year 13.
Yeah. I mean, such is life. And actually, that was something I kind of struggled with, was to give them some kind of a heads up ahead of time. Yeah. But I honestly thought better about it. My employee told me, but I have a very different relationship with my employees than I have with our management, right? Our management doesn't.
Right.
They don't view it the same way.
No. If you would have told them, hey, I'm looking, they would have gotten rid of you.
Yeah.
They would immediately prepped, found, and the moment they found a replacement, would have dumped you.
That's kind of the way I was looking at it too.
Before you even had anything. No.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Hey, that's, you know, not, it's, I, like, my guy, he, I don't know, he had a lot of trust in me, and it was founded because I took care of him, and I always try to take care of my people. That's kind of one of my more important things that I've always done as a manager. But beyond that, it was just him, right? So he didn't have kids. He didn't, at the time, he wasn't married. So he was really just taking care of himself. So, you know, worst comes to worse, you know, he could probably pick up another job pretty quick and live lean for a little, you know what I mean? But it's like,
right.
I've got two kids. I got a wife. I got a house payment. You know, I've got car payment. You know, he didn't have any of that stuff. So,
right.
I don't know. I just, that stuff worries me. So I just, I don't know. I didn't.
Well, when you're working for a company that doesn't follow the norm, like Viasat, there was a guy that worked, they let him go after his 90 days. They still gave him severance.
That's awesome.
You were not working for a company that, you know, acknowledged that the word severance was even in the dictionary.
Well, and
so they were not going to take care of you.
I'm not
so,
of the
like,
mind
you had to take care of yourself.
You know, and that's all up for debate, because I don't really know what would have happened ultimately. And I would have liked to have something said. Ultimately, it doesn't matter one way or the other. Everything's going to be fine. It's just, I would have liked to give them more than 2 weeks. But it's just, you know, nothing is certain until I had that paperwork in front of me and signed.
Right. Right.
Like, I didn't even want to talk about it out loud with anybody, because I've got this weird thing about, and I know what it comes from. It was when I first took my CCNA back in 2003, the first time I took it, I told everybody at work at UCS that I was getting ready to, you know, I'd been studying so hard. I was getting ready to take my CCNA and tell everybody about it. And then I got to explain to everybody individually how I failed it.
and
I was like, I don't know.
And that's something that stuck with you. Every time you left and took your CCMP or one of your other tests, you never told anybody. You just showed up to work late.
Yeah. Every time I was recertifying or when I took the CCIE stuff, I just, I've got to take a long lunch. And I would go, and then I would take the test. And when I passed it, I would say, hey, yeah, I just did this thing.
I may be editing the history, but I could have sworn there was at least one time where I said, good luck on your test. When you were like, I gotta take a long lunch today. I was like, good luck. I don't know if that actually happened or not. I'm pretty sure. I could have sworn I did that, because there were so many times where, like, that had happened so many times before.
I don't know. But you know what's so crazy is, I've never wanted to work someplace half as much as I've wanted to work on this Ansible team at Red Hat. And every time I would talk to Jimmy, I was like, you don't have to keep selling me on it, dude. You are quite literally killing my soul by inches. Every time you talk about how fun it is, how awesome it is. And that when I was talking to, so I got to have candid conversations with Jimmy and Justin about it, and what they liked about it, what they didn't like about it. And what they didn't like about it was, like, it was like asking you one of those questions where you're like, huh, let me think for a while. Cause it's like so difficult to find things that are bad about it. And, when I got to talk to the other, on the technical interviews, I asked those guys the same things. Like, what do you like about this place? You know, what do you dislike about it? And man, they were just all about it. And then even the guy, I know, like in a panel situation, all these guys, you know, they're not going to want to say bad things, you know, in right. a group setting, but they all had really solid, positive things to say about it. And so I, you know, just that the idea of getting to become an expert on an automation platform, like, I don't know what it is about me, but I love the idea, and I always have, of having computers control the physical world, just like doing that sort of thing. And so then I did computer yeah. science in school, and you know, that was fun, but I didn't scratch that mental itch, you know. But then when I found networking, it's kind of like marrying the two together, right? Because there's this physical aspect to computer or to networking, you know, because I like working with right. hands, I like making, so it's those making those real life connections. And then mm-hmm. This automation piece, it's the networking stuff that I love, but it's also doing that automated control piece, you know, where it can just be really, really clever. Like when I go to IKEA, that's what gets me every time. When I walk through their kitchen stuff, I'm like, Jesus, that's so clever how they just did this thing and they did that thing. And that's what I love about Ansible, is because you get to like, yeah. you get to like engineer that cleverness and have it do all that stuff. And just the idea that you get to, I get to build proof of concepts, right? So like, we need this thing to do these things, and I get to figure that out. I get to like build a lab. I get to make it do that stuff. And then I get to go and present it, you know, and I get to show these people. And I get to dream with them. Like, you know, what's something crappy about your job that you don't want to do anymore? Let's figure out how we automate that, you know? And like, how do yeah. we, how can
that's
I
what my,
help
That's
you?
What my buddy Seth does. That's what my buddy Seth does. Like, so what are your pain points about? Like, go up to the developers yeah. and he's like, all right, I'm going to automate. I'm gonna get that going.
I love that. I love the idea. And then, as soon as we get them there, they're happy, you know, we find a workable solution for them, I get to leave and then move on to the next person, right? Like, I don't even have to do the implementation stuff. We've got a whole team that'll do that, that'll grind yeah. out the boring parts.
yeah.
I just get to go in there.
That actually sounds like fun. I'm going to...
Yeah, I can't wait. Like, I am so jazzed. Like, I haven't been excited to, like, go to work. I don't know. It's been like a really long time. Like, oh, really?
At least 3 years.
Time. It's
because I haven't been there. Since you've been gone. Yeah.
Nah, you are a miserable bastard there towards the end. It's probably been like 4.5.
Yeah. Oh, so okay. Yeah. The year I was there before I left. I was miserable. That would be exactly how it was to be around you. That last 6 to 9 months before you went and worked for the basketball team,
right?
Like, when you had no soul, but you were a soulless man at a desk.
Yeah,
like for
grinding
a year
it out. That was yeah. I had to leave. I had to leave.
I know. I know. I wish I would have had like the. I mean, that's why things worked out the way they did. Like I had to get pushed out because. I would have sat there miserable for the rest of my life had they let me.
I don't understand that. I don't understand why you would do that to yourself. Do you think you're not worthy of happiness? Like, or like, where are you at?
It's of you know, what am I worth kind of thing. It was a you know, what is my experience worth outside of what I've been doing for the last 15 years? Because it was a lot. We did everything. I did a little bit of everything. Yeah. So what does a jack of all trades actually have to sell when he goes on the road and tries to sell himself?
Inch deep, mile wide, right?
Right. I could do everything. I could do anything you need me to do on your team. Just hire me and let me start doing something. That I mean, how do you, like, that's a very weak argument to get in the door, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's tough. And what I've found, belatedly, I mean, I wish I had known this so much sooner, is that making human contact, you know, like the human network, actually, you know, networking with people is yeah. like, that's the way to go. That's how you actually find real jobs that you like.
That's how I landed where I landed, man.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
Because we had done work with it. Yeah.
That day I called Eddie. I was like, I he was the first customer I ever met. 15-year relationship with this guy. I was like, bud, shoot you straight. I don't have a job anymore. Do you have one? He's like, well, we had a rec open for a network engineer, and it got closed because we couldn't find anybody. I'm going to put that on the fast track. And like, what, 4 or 5 weeks, which is pretty fast for as large of a company as Viasat. Like, I went through, you know, 2 rounds of interviews and one on one in person. And that was fast tracked. They were like, we need to get this guy because this is a lot of experience that just got put on the market and we should lock it down. So,
That's cool. Yeah. So I guess at the end of it, talked to him and that was that. And then, we've just been going ham the last, what felt like forever. And, just been going crazy. Jacob reached out to me pretty quick. I wasn't going to blindside him. He had some inkling, ahead of time.
Sure.
Because I really needed him to say, hey, well, I said to him, what do you need me to document? Tell me, give me the list of all the things you really need me to put on paper. And so, you know, we got all that done, taken care of, ahead, which I really wanted to do because I didn't want to be scrambling these last few days trying to, you know, slapdash something together, which is good because we have zero time right now because we're scrambling all this other stuff. But,
right.
But, the other executive, the final executive that I haven't mentioned, still hasn't said anything to me. So,
He won't.
I was just kind of surprised.
I sent him. I sent him.
They didn't say anything. So
I sent him an email that day. I was like, hey, I want to thank you for the opportunity. This one time you did this really nice thing for me. Like, you made this place feel like a family. I really appreciate the time that I was like, I was totally cool. I was like, I appreciate the 14 years that like you gave me here. It was really cool. Never heard anything from him. Never replied.
I'm not even talking about that guy. I'm talking about a guy on the ops team.
Oh.
It's over the ops team. That guy, the guy you were talking about, I don't think, I'm not going to hear anything. So I'm not.
No.
I'm not worried about that. So, definitely. But I appreciate everybody because everybody did me right for so long. You know, it's just, it is what it is. But I guess that's kind of the complete story in a weird roundabout sort of way.
Well, and I'm really happy that you found something and that you took the time to like to talk through it with me especially. I think it was good to have this back and forth.
In a roundabout way. Well, not even a roundabout way. In a very specific way.
If there was anybody you were going to have on the podcast to like
talk about
to go over this news, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, you've got more runtime, more history, certainly with Fibertown than anybody else. So they wouldn't. I don't know. They wouldn't feel it as viscerally, I guess, as you do. And But like our time together. Ultimately, the guy I'm going to be working for is your brother. And the whole reason I knew about this job was because we were both at your birthday party. So, had that not occurred, but then again, had I not worked with you for so long, it wouldn't have occurred either. Right. But ultimately through you is the reason I found this job. So I know you signed that paperwork that said you wouldn't peel anybody off from the company, but I guess in some roundabout way you did anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, but you are past the 24-month period, so it doesn't matter.
Ah, there you go. So it's 2 years. You're not supposed to steal anybody for 2 years.
It's 24 months. So literally, at this point, I could send an email to the NOC email address and be like, "Hey, we're hiring," and they couldn't do anything.
Yeah, the thing is, you'd have to work with all those guys, and you don't want to do that.
I was like, that was the other side of that sword. Oh man,
I don't know. This was a long, winding, weird one.
This was cathartic to experience. I don't know. I think anybody who's watching this can at some point identify with something you've gone through or that I've gone through. You know,
I think we all have. You know, and
find it either helpful or amusing.
So I know we've all had jobs that were awful. We've all had jobs, you know, at least at some point or another, they were awful.
Sure.
Some that would just work great. Some that were a grind. Some that were monotonous. And I've noticed that the people at Red Hat that I talked to that really appreciated the job were ones that had shit jobs. So I think Jimmy and Justin, both their time at K2Share, I think gave them a hell of a lot of perspective. And I think that's one of the reasons they are so excited and pleased to be working for this place. And because
I got Justin that job, actually. I got him the job at K2Share.
Yeah. So I don't want to trash talk K2Share or anything. Like, it's not what my intention is. Just the time there, when they were there, it was very taxing, very hectic, and very shorthanded. And it was just, it was really tough on those guys. So I'm not saying it's that way now. And because I honestly don't know. I just know that that gave them really good perspective to see how good it is at Red Hat. So I feel like I've got some good perspective too at this point. So I'm really excited to be working for a place like that.
Well, it's good to hear, man. I'm really, I've told you, I've been waiting and excited for you to find your next thing. Cause I know how healthy it was for me to find something else.
Oh yeah. Oh dude, it was transformative for you. You needed to be out of there so bad.
Yeah.
It was like an abscess tooth. You needed to be plucked out. It was just, it was killing you slowly.
It's one thing to still be part of something and watch people dismantling it. It's another thing to have already moved on and not be able to not care anymore. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
To be like, hey, you've been here forever. What do you think we should do? Oh, I think you should do A. Oh, okay, cool. We're going to do XYZ and it's probably going to break everything. All right. Well, we're going to piss the customers off intentionally. Okay. I mean, I could tell you it's going to piss them off and you shouldn't do it this way, but what do I know?
Nothing.
I've only out survived 4 operations managers.
Oh, well, yeah. Such is life. That's the nature of things. You know, you grow, change,
absolutely.
You evolve.
I've been able to mentor people who I've seen acting the way I used to act. You know what I mean? Just getting upset about stupid little things and going on a rant about it. I'm like, yeah, no, you're not wrong. But
I remember that,
James. I still do it about stupid people, but it's stupid people that I have to deal with at my company. I don't do it about customers anymore.
That's good.
I rant about the stupid people who are supposed to be managing a customer relationship who are mismanaging it. So
perspective. See, I mean,
exactly.
You've seen it good. You've seen it bad. Now you, that's like, you know, what's so funny is I was having a conversation with Christy about parenting your parents, that I see a lot of young people now having to parent their parents. I think you know what I'm talking about. It's like, I'll see my mom doing something that's like, you know, cause she, all right, I'll give you the 30 second version for people listening, is that she was married to my stepdad for like 25 years and wasn't exactly happy in that marriage and was just kind of consigned herself to, this is my fate. And then eventually he actually died. And then she reacquainted herself with her like high school sweetheart. And she told me, this is the only man I've ever loved. It's crazy. And they ended up getting back together and now they're married. And so, to be honest with you, she's never been in like a happy, healthy, loving relationship ever in her life with another companion. So I see her making the mistakes that I made when I was like 19. Because Christy and I got together when I was 16, right? And it's like, hey, bro, I am so far past this bullshit that you're going through right now. And I see you making all these mistakes and I want to say something, but I can't say something because it's like, she's making emotional decisions. It's not based on logic. So it doesn't matter what I say. She's going to do what she's going to do. But it's like, this is not how it's supposed to work. Like, I'm not supposed to see her walking through this minefield and about to step on something and then just, you know, like, is this the journey of every child once they hit their 30s that, like, somewhere in there they have to start parenting their parents? I was like, what is my child going to parent me on?
What bumbling thing
are they going to, like, what am I going to be doing that's so stupid they're going to have to tell me about? Because it's like,
I think the key is to let them make their own decisions.
Am I helicopter parenting my mom?
you're trying to manage. I don't know.
It's weird.
I think it's yeah. It's weird.
It's super strange. So I'm doing that. I know that's like Christy's trying to parent her parents for doing just dumb stuff. And we don't even need to get into what the stuff you're going there. But yeah, you're.
No, I've you're outlined healthy boundaries and said, hey.
Yeah, you're definitely trying to.
If you want things to be okay, this is parent, you have to do these two things. And I have not heard anything back yet, yeah. So I guess we're not having a healthy relationship.
But I know, you know, it's like not.
Yeah,
no, it's not as uncommon as I had thought it was. I guess it's just it seems so strange. I don't know. It's just it's uncharted territory for me, and it feels weird. And so I've come to this place where I'm just having to like let it go. You know, just frozen it. Just realize it's not something I can control. And while it still bothers me, just kind of just backing away.
You just go like you have to emotionally separate yourself and be like, this is your choice. Cool. I can, regardless of what I see, you're gonna go do your experience, and that's okay. You have to be okay with someone else being their own person, and coming from a codependent background as I have, it's just sort of like, I gotta control, I gotta save. It's like, no, because there's two parts to that relationship. There's the more common one you hear about is the codependent person who needs, like, I need you, I need external things to modify or sustain my emotional health. And then there's the less common one you don't hear about, which is the savior, who like needs to be needed. And that is, you know, that's Richard and him dealing with his kids. That's me. That's Stephanie. And we have to fight that urge. Thankfully, we're both like,
very
that,
lazy.
That same. Yeah. Well, no, we're both that same. We're both that same personality type. That saver person. So like, we don't allow the other person to help us, which causes its own set of arguments that we have to work through sometimes. But like, we don't fall into a real like hyper codependent north south polar attraction thing. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. So you're the same sides of the magnet. So you kind of repel.
Yeah, we are. We're okay. Yeah, we don't actually. You know, touch in unhealthy ways.
That's hot.
we touch in all the healthy ways.
Oh man.
On that note.
Yeah. Let's wrap it up with some positive stuff. So I was thinking about the other day. I think at some point in everybody's life, they have to find their favorite shitty Chinese food. Because every town that I've been in the last like 10 years, has just a plethora of shitty Chinese food, and you just really got to try them all and find your favorite of the bad Chinese food.
I think in the comments below, put in your city, and city and state, and then the name of the restaurant.
I think for me, my favorite shitty Chinese food in town is Tijin's. I think that's
it is
because it's like everybody else makes me feel bad when I eat it.
What's the Asian place right next to the Tower Point HEB?
I think they were Asians.
I forget. There's one there. I walk in. I smell their broccoli beef. It says their kung pao beef. There's a smell in the air every time. I'm like, oh my gosh, I want terrible Chinese. There's some part of me that
place is super close to my house, and we've eaten it plenty of times, and it makes me feel like physically bad every time we eat that. But Tijin's does not make me feel physically bad. So
it doesn't.
Maybe they
just
put too much MSG in their food at that other place or something. But. Yeah.
You and I, as soon as restaurants are open again, we're getting lunch at Tijin's. So
yeah, dude, I got a new job, but I don't get to celebrate anywhere. So
we'll have an online party. Order all your friends something on Amazon and have it shipped to their house, and then get on a Slack video. We'll do a podcast where we get to celebrate your new job.
There you go. How about we do an Amazon challenge where we send random items to our friends that they don't know what they are. They get to take them out and experience them live on the podcast.
Is this a gift? All right, everybody open your Amazon package. Oh gosh. No, I know that would go terribly wrong.
Yeah. So
because Justin has the money, he would actually order you the 500 gallon tub of lube and it would show up. it would show up in your driveway.
A giant barrel of KY. Yes. I'm sure I would immediately know what that was.
Right, but you still have the problem of it being in your driveway.
All right. So I think there is definitely stuff going on right now in the world. We all know about COVID. We all know that we're sheltering in place. At least the smart people are trying to really distance themselves, and we're very much doing that. So what have you been doing to preoccupy yourself? I've been cleaning a lot. So this room behind me, I've actually gone through all my shelves. Dude, I purged so much old IT related stuff that it's like it's been in boxes. Some of the vast majority I didn't even realize I had. So I threw away like 5 2960 switches or 2950 switches. Yeah, they're even older. 2950s.
There you go.
Like some old Linksys switches, just a ton of old IT crap got rid of. Found like some old net screen firewall. Just been like purging all that crap. And then I found
all
like
the garbage,
a bucket of case fans and heat sinks. And I was like, why do I have this stuff? Just, I got rid of so much stuff. It's insane. I found that I've got these Samsung monitors. I've got like three or four just sitting around that I have nothing to do with. They're like decent and they do. I need to get rid of them. I need to find somebody to take some of them from me.
Yeah. I'm homeschooling 5 kids for the next foreseeable future. Like, I have so many computers set up, it's not even funny.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. I didn't really have any, like, none of it was anything that was good. And some of it I had, like, this weird, like, don't get rid of that. You might, and I was like, no, what am I, an idiot? Yeah. Get rid of it. Just so.
It feels so good. It feels so good.
Yeah. I'm still going through my closet. I've got the bottom part where I like, save a lot of weird odds and ends and knickknacks because, like, at Halloween, I'll, like, make costumes and masks and stuff. So I'm going to go through some of that stuff and organize or whatever, but I've been definitely purging. I found some of my stuff from Memphis, like the 5K I ran was down there, and then like the last flyer from the game that I went to, the very last one.
Yeah.
And then you remember when I went through the storm drains in Memphis, like the oldest ones? I found my keepsake that I had from there.
Oh, that bullet.
Yeah, an old 38 bullet from the storm drains. I think it's a 38. Remington 38. Yeah, dude, there were so many bullet casings in the storm drains in Memphis. Like, so many. It's like Full Metal Jacket in there, bro. It was it was crazy. Yeah. But yeah, so that was my cue. So I was just found like weird little knickknacks and odds and ends and stuff like that. So I was pretty, I don't know. It's just kind of cool taking a little walk down there. I found my old CCIE written book. And it still had like tons of extra material that I put in there and notes. And I was like, you know what? Throwing this thing away. I've carried this crap with me forever. And,
I've been working on music. Just a lot of, guitar stuff. Yeah. Yeah. It's lots of fun.
That's good.
It's been a healthy outlet.
That's good. Are you making the kids do stuff with you? Or is this just kind of a solo journey?
Me and Steph, I'm teaching her guitar, and I'm doing some of my own stuff, and the kids play along on their violins sometimes and stuff like that. So
that's cool.
We're getting ready for the new house, and it's going to be, the garage is going to be the music area. So it'll be really cool.
That's cool. Something else I found that's really fun is Master Pancake Theater is doing live streams on Twitch. So they're.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I caught one yesterday. It was Leprechaun 3. It was pretty hilarious. And they've got a pseudo schedule of sorts on their Facebook page. I'll put some links to it or whatever. But
cool.
For the guys that actually went to the Mum in Austin, I took a bunch of them to see Master Pancake. So I don't know, man. It's just it's kind of cool for these guys to reach out. And they have kind of a donate link at the bottom because – a lot of them are performers and comedians, and they aren't working right now. So this is a way for them to continue to kind of try and survive. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Ah, man. So that's my, I can, one of my favorite hidden gems that I found is that Master Pancake's doing these streams. Have you found any kind of interesting creative outlets other than the music and stuff?
The music? No, man. It's just working, finishing a degree, raising 5 kids, 3 of which are only here every other week, so that's its own
set of challenges.
Good times.
All right. Well, we've hit an hour and a half, believe it or not.
That's impressive. That's 30 minutes longer than we normally go, right? There was a lot of meat to this this episode. A lot of heart.
Yeah, for sure.
Or something. But this was fun. Call me back anytime, man.
Yeah.
I love going back and forth.
You could say it. You love me. I know.
I do. I miss you.
All right. I miss your musk. All right, Mr. Burdine, if people are going to get a hold of you, how would you have them do that?
I'm on Slack. I'm on the YouTubes. I'll post my YouTube channel in my Slack profile so you can go hear my music. I did a bunch of live performances a couple years ago. I did like a Facebook Live show.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I think something like that a couple years back. In a period of my life when I had a lot more free time after 8 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
But find me on the internet. I'm around.
All right, so you can find him in, he's in the Little Brothers Wisp Slack now. So it's patreon.com/brotherswisp. You get in there, throw us a few bones, we'll give you access to all the James you can handle. If you want,
trust me, it's not much.
That's not the joke he used to make. But you can find me at greg@gregsoul.com, where I occasionally blog. You guys know that. Also, thebrotherswist.com, and then patreon.com/brotherswist. You can jump in the Slack. A lot of good discourse, although it has been sort of depressingly quiet lately. I think it's multiple things. I think everybody's just so crazy busy right now, just doing installs and getting on top of things, but also just the time. People haven't felt as jovial and happy, and hopefully maybe we can come up with like some Jackbox games. We can all just play Jackbox together or something like that. Just get loud and stupid and say dumb stuff. So thank you guys for listening. James, thank you so much for popping on here. I always enjoy having
my pleasure.
Just any excuse to talk to you, it always jazzes me up for the rest of the day, man. So thank you again.
Yeah, me too. Thanks
everybody.
Just give us a listen, because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry, you're forgiven.